Hello and welcome back. This is your host of Architecturally Speaking, Ryan Schwartz, and we're back with another episode. And this is one that I've really been looking forward to. But maybe you're new here and you don't know what Architecturally Speaking is all about. Well, it's a new podcast series created by the Ontario Association of Architects to pull back the curtain on the profession of architecture, the field of architecture, and give you a little peek behind the scenes. So we're talking to architects, we're talking to other folks in the industry, we're talking about design and sustainability, about housing and buildings and how those buildings affect our lives each and every single day. So if you haven't checked out the previous episodes, I encourage you to do that. They're great. But today we're talking about something a little bit different. It's a little more unique than your typical office tower or condo building, and it's an animal habitat at the Toronto Zoo. And we're lucky enough to have Edward Chan with us here today to discuss it and tell us all about it. So Edward, welcome.
Thanks, Ryan. It's a pleasure to participate and actually to share our experiences on this project.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time and for joining us. So I did a little bit of digging for an introduction for yourself. So you're obviously an architect and you're a partner at Zeidler. You started out in landscape architecture and you have quite a bit of experience in healthcare as well. But maybe the best way to introduce you is just to let you do that. So tell us a little bit about your role and how you got to where you are today.
Great. Now, I think it's interesting you keyed in on the landscape because we're talking about the Toronto Zoo project, the orangutan habitat. And it is a bit of a cross-section of landscape and architecture, which is really hitting my sweet spot, as they say. I started as a landscape architect and practiced for a few years and then went to grad school and then to basically just train as an architect and then really carry the two kind of sister disciplines and really bring that a different perspective, how, you know, the built environment can be done through the lens of an architect and a landscape architect per se. So I joined Zeidler in 2017 as a partner, and actually this year is Zeidler's 70th anniversary as a practicing office under our former co-founder Eb Zeidler when he first had his, I would say, name on the door. So we're celebrating our 70th anniversary, we're living through kind of, you know, Eb's legacy in terms of being having fingerprints and footprints across the Canadian landscape in terms of cultural, iconic, and landmark projects. I think this Toronto Zoo project is no different. It's part of potentially a cultural landmark, as when you designed Ontario Place and the Toronto Eaton Centre and Canada Place here in Vancouver, BC. I've spent a lot of my career doing projects with people, as they say, or in the kind of institutional market and building types. This one, although it's institutional in terms of nature, in terms of cultural, but it's much different in terms of the types of users, I call it.
Yeah, and we'll get into that for sure. I'm kind of excited about that. So, it's interesting. You talk about all these different projects. I think when a lot of people think about architects, they think, oh, we design fancy houses and offices and things like that. But just the variety and the scale of projects that architects tackle, it's pretty incredible. And I think this one, you know, kind of falls outside that normal box for sure, right? It's pretty unique. So describe the project a little bit. What are we talking about in terms of this habitat at the zoo?
Yeah. It's a habitat, but I mean, if you just think about the word and the definition of habitat, I mean, really it's a place for living. I mean, it may have more connotations towards, you know, the natural environment, organic beings, organic animals and beings, but, you know, really have to think back to, you know, mostly Safdie Habitat 67, or really, you know, doing this project is no different than what an architect would do designing a building or a house, for example. So we really see it as kind of like, it overlaps, I guess, is the best way to say it. So I think this was not, although it was not designed for humans, it wasn't, I would say, completely outside of our comfort zone, although it did stretch imagination, I would say. We did work with an associate architecture and landscape company that actually does a lot of projects around the world with animal habitats, and it was a great collaboration. I think one of these, we're starting to see in that kind of architectural world, I think this is good for people, and I guess in the public, to understand that the projects are just going to get more complex. And there's a lot
every
of...
Project.
Exactly, every project, and they really kind of span in terms of many different stakeholders, users, requirements. And, you know, I think finding a lot more projects, the levels of expertise between different architects, you know, I think there's a new kind of way of collaborating now. And I think this is really making projects kind of exciting. And not even just between architects, I would say even between the owners and the contractors. I think that's a new way of architecture starting to begin to kind of unfold itself. I think for this particular project, it was really a collaboration that spawned originally at the Calgary Zoo. And we did our office with Jones & Jones Well worked on what's called the Panda Passage with the Calgary Zoo. And kind of coincidentally, it was the legacy of the panda habitat, would be meant for an orangutan habitat. So that was a bit of a coincidence, to be honest. I don't think it was intentional in terms of what doing this project for the Toronto Zoo, but it was intentional. And actually that project in Calgary, it was certified the pedal for kind of this, one of the, sorry, I can't, I apologize, I forget the top of my head, but kind of the certification, but it was kind of pedal certified. And, you know, it was kind of like the starting of that, of the type of work that we've done across the country. Actually, even the very first project was at Calgary Zoo, it was called the African Savannah Project. That was back early or 2000s, and that would be for, I think the giraffes were habitat in that too. So this project kind of started with the ability to create more spaces for the existing orangutan species in the zoo. Because if you're not familiar, the orangutans, their habitat is inside the Indomain, which is, you know, a beautiful building designed by Ron Tom, their famous Canadian architect. And in the ability to create spaces that were actually outdoor spaces. I mean, these animals, these species are their original, original habitat is in the rainforest.
They need that space.
And they're even in Indonesia, the Sumatrans, and these are Sumatran orangutans. And so it was a real kind of opportunity to create an outdoor habitat space, to be honest. And these animals, from day they were born, Poupée's being the eldest, she's never been outside when she's been at the Toronto Zoo. So this is a great opportunity. And then kind of extending out, we can talk more into the details, but I think just the genesis of the project was really to create an exterior space that will give an opportunity for the orangutans to feel like they're in their natural environment, or the habitat, as they say, right? So it's kind of like providing a new space, and the species are kind of semi-solitary. So it's not necessarily like creating a space and they're all kind of convene. They actually want to, because they're semi-solitary animals, they don't like to hang out with each other per se.
They need their own space.
It's like a teenager, right? You need your own space. and so it was the opportunity to create that for this project. And so the eventuality, when they get a little bit more acclimatized to their environment, they will start, you know, being in different spaces. And then the great opportunity is actually have all the orangutans be able to be in any one of the habitats that kind of exist, which is either the existing interior one or the new exterior habitat. So I think that's a really great opportunity for this project.
Okay. And you alluded to a couple things I want to touch on there. So you clearly have done some previous work with animal habitats and things like that. I'm so ignorant with these zoo projects. I have no idea how they work. Like, do you roll into the city of Toronto and say, hey, we're looking for a building permit for, you know, a panda enclosure? Or like, how does that even work?
It's partially, this one's interesting because it's a good point, because it's essentially an exterior habitat project, and there are elements that are building. And so yes, you go through a traditional building permit, really, but it's really for those aspects that I would call building. And so what in this project would be the research station, and then the transitional holding area. And then the other part would be, we call it special structures, bridges fall under special structures. So it's a bit of a hybrid. So I guess that, again, this makes this project even more unique, because it isn't your traditionally, you go into the building permit and you get your mechanical electrical permits and your building permits. And then, but even the inspector had to understand how to kind of walk through the site and what to look at for closing this permit out. But it would fall under like a building permit, and we had a review of special structures.
Okay, interesting. So I imagine the zoo is similar in some ways to something like an airport, because you have these very clear delineated areas for guests, people that are traveling through. You can't just wander through security, much like you can't wander into the tiger enclosure. So there's a lot happening behind the scenes that you don't necessarily get to see. You're as a visitor, you're sort of limited to this very curated experience. But I'm sure there's a lot of challenges and things to incorporate behind the scenes. So tell me a bit about the other things that you're including here, like vet care and feeding and things like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the project really started, like I said, we affectionately call them the zoo team. And it's like made up of the wildlife care team, the facilities team, and the guest experience team. And actually, even Dolph, who's the CEO of the Toronto Zoo, was very involved in the very beginning. And one of the one word I always recall and then kind of reverberates with me is that wow. You need to have that wow. And when eventually we didn't know what that meant yet as we were developing the design, and I think organically it came out, and it actually ended up being the what we thought was the wow was this span between two poles across the ravine, which is 78 meters long, which probably one of its kind, was the wow. But we always think the whole habitat in general was a really wow, because you have all these poles that kind of span between in the habitat, outside the habitat, where the guests could to see the orangutans above them, they could see them at eye level or below. So a lot of it would really the real kind of objective, kind of the concept, was to develop a habitat that created immersion. And I think back today when I talked about the Toronto Zoo's kind of mission about conservation, that immersive feeling was really to get the guest, the visitor, to really feel like that they were participating inside the rainforest as really as almost as one of the species orangutans. And it's really, I think it's one of those things where you start to feel like you're in, you know, in someone's, you know, own home, you feel like that you want to do something to protect that home.
You're in their respect. Home.
It's kind of idea. Yeah. The idea of conservation, and that really was that call to action. And so, you know, the immersion of the guests coming from the interior habitat, which is in the existing Indomain pavilion, then coming to this plaza, seeing, you know, the orangutans potentially above you with, there's two poles outside, and then kind of, you know, going to different viewing points, and then you kind of walking your way up to, you know, the new treehouse, so we call it. And the idea is that, and I think as the landscape starts growing in, you'll really just feel that immersion as kind of like you start feeling the plants, you know, tactily and visually coming along that. And really the idea that you're starting to kind of ascend up into the rainforest, into the elements, into the higher aerial elements. And that was kind of the immersion experience. And that was part of called the guest experience. But, and then with habitat design itself, was really, how do you create this as organic and as, call it, as real life as possible to the Sumatran rainforest, and that's really what it is. And it's really, now obviously we couldn't create the to the T in terms of like the climbing structure and the actually we're in a Canadian environment, but really just kind of having that ability to mimic that, and that was really kind of the drivers for the project. And it was a very organic feeling, so there were a lot of running water in there, a lot of different terrain to kind of keep that in interest for the species. And that was really what was the driver of the project, really to create the interest, create the variety. And then I think fundamentally the one big idea was not to have a person or visitor to see the entire habitat with one view. So they would always have to kind of piece that experience together, where they would come back and then it would really try to have the ability to want to come back
and explore. And not, you're not
one
just
view. Yeah. Not having viewing. One view.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love that you talked about this wow factor and the immersion, because in looking this up, I saw that there's a little play area outside for visitors, for guests, and it's got some ropes and things. And I can just imagine little kids going and you're watching these apes and then on the way out, they're just mimicking what they see and they're probably climbing around. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. And the kids play area, I mean, it could even be the adults play area too. it's interestingly, we were trying to make it as as a one-to-one as what's inside the habitat as well, because there's an area inside habitat where you kind of look around that particular viewing area. So they're almost adjacent to each other. And it was the idea that to kind of create that, again, back to the immersive experience, and then using the same tree-like climbing materials as well. So it didn't feel like it was a prescribed children's play area. It just felt like it was natural, and you just wanted to just experience and explore, and just kind of how the orangutans would do that in their own habitat. Yeah, that was really the intention of the children's play area, I call it. Or
I like it.
Call it human play area.
Yeah, exactly. Play area. And you touched on this a little bit with the landscape. And obviously that's a big part of this. So, I mean, was there a landscape? I guess you said there was a consultant involved. I guess that was a landscape architect.
That was Jones and Jones. They supported the subject matter expert, and they were the landscape lead concept designers.
So, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, there's obviously you can't just have Canadian trees in there, and it's, you know, what kinds of things did you have to bring in, or what kind of research went into this?
Yeah, we did have to use the native plants because it was outside.
Enough.
So we did. What we're trying to do was find plants that had the same kind of foliage or experience that would be in a tropical colored rainforest. But obviously would survive in Canada. And so it was a nice little hybrid of obviously we're trying to create that experience of an organic habitat, but it was really obviously in the Canadian context. I think even in some extent, I was trying to give a bit of a different a modernist vernacular to kind of a South Asian, would be some South Asian type of architecture vernacular, which is similar to that.
Okay. So in this case, the zoo is obviously the client, but you have multiple sort of user groups that are using this on a daily basis. You have people coming to visit, you have staff that's working there, and obviously you have animals that live there. So how do you really balance the design when this is all playing out? How do you balance that split between these three different groups and make sure that everyone's happy and satisfied?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the zoo team that I mentioned, where the cross-section of the wildlife care facilities team and the guest experience team. And you know, a lot of the early kind of design thinking was around, it was all through workshopping. And I think the zoo, they're such a collaborative group that they understand, you know, obviously animals first is the real thinking when you start designing it. But, you know, it's obviously centered around a guest experience. And it really became that organic. It wasn't something that at the, you know, I give even some extent, a traditional project where, you know, an architect comes with an idea, you have a program and you come up with an idea. There wasn't really a prescribed program per se. It's just, you know, let's create a habitat for the orangutans
and then you
need a research space, and then you know, that was really it. And not like you need a, you know, how many washrooms or you need a classroom per se. And so I think it was probably one of the few, I'd say, total open collaborative, just organically came through and I think it's from that experience with that wild, the zoo team that allowed us to kind of really start that design thinking. And then I think that's where it spawned that second, we call it the second habitat, which is the two poles that go outside across the ravine. I think that particular aspect of the project really was organic. It wasn't something that came out from the early days of this design thinking. And I think that's to that extent, I think it was that became the wow, but it was just because it was just something organic. It wasn't a necessity. We had to create that. It was just an opportunity. We thought this would be amazing if we could do this and really connect that interior existing pavilion habitat and really allow it to expand and then have the habitat at the end of the day become an extension and really be almost, again, back to the idea of the immersion, like really extend that beyond, you know, its original boundaries, say.
And you mentioned research, so I'm assuming the zoo does tons of this stuff. I'm sure there's researchers there all the time. Has there been any feedback coming in yet through visitors or through the researchers themselves, or you know, what kind of feedback have you gotten?
I haven't seen any research, but it's more kind of observation. I mean, right now it's a lot of observation, and because of they're trying to acclimatize the orangutans, and so one of the first tactics they were first of all, they've never had experience like being outside. So it was really getting them out of that comfort zone. But they relied on Pupé, the eldest, who would be kind of like the one that the follower, let's call it, you know, being also the dominant female orangutan. So they had Pupé out and to experience and start investigating the habitat. And that was using that as a behavioral. It was like that would hopefully draw the other orangutans. And eventually it did. It actually started doing that. The project was finished in early July of 2023. And so they didn't have as much time to acclimatize because of the weather in Canada. And, you know, they like to have a mean temperature of about 12 degrees, like the full day and night. So it was really a short period for them to acclimatize. So we're expecting that this coming year, when they have a little bit more of a fuller year, they'll start acclimatizing. And then that research, the intention of that research station where we have the, you know, we have researchers and trainers kind of interacting with orangutans and the visitors can actually see that. They can start seeing some of its the behavioral research that hopefully that would come out with this design of this new habitat.
That's great. Yeah, I guess so. It's only been open about a year. So yeah, it takes some time to really, just like, you know, you move into a new house, it takes time so to get comfortable. So you've done a couple similar projects before. Any other projects like this on the horizon? Anything coming up for more habitats, anything like that?
Interestingly, yeah, we have one more project which we feel it could be just as transformational for the Toronto Zoo. We're underway on the new, it's called the Community Conservation Campus, and it's essentially the new phase for the Toronto Zoo. And it's two new buildings that have an otter habitat incorporated in one of the buildings. And the intention is the building would be both a research, a guest experience, kind of an academic and civic space for the Toronto Zoo and you know, the community of the zoo, which would be East Toronto and Scarborough. And it really is idea. It breaks down the notion of what an entrance to a zoo is about now. And so it actually has one building is partnered with University of Toronto Scarborough, and there'll be research labs and classrooms, and it's all mass timber. It's really trying to play more into, like, you know our action, our, you know, our responsibility as architects for climate action. And so it'll be all mass timber. And then the other building will be for guest experience, which would be retail. And there's an otter habitat integrated into the building. And so it'd be a bit free flowing. So when you walk through the main entrance to the Toronto Zoo, it really start feeling again, back to the idea of this immersive. And it's kind of this a democratic experience to the zoo, where if you know, depending on your socioeconomical situation, you can still experience the zoo and really feel part of the zoo and not have, and while not actually having to, you know, have to have a paid admission, you can experience the otters, you can experience, you know, the Blanding Turtle Conservation Labs, and really be part of the messaging that Toronto Zoo is trying to bring forward as a new zoo in Canada.
That's great. And you mentioned the habitats for these animals and sustainability and climate change and things like that, and obviously that's always a factor. And doing a bit of research for this, you know, I couldn't help but think about sort of the moral aspect of this. You're creating kind of an animal enclosure, and there's probably some challenges with that. But also, it kind of reaches back to that idea of conservation and education. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on that and how that all fits together?
Yeah, I mean, I think you, I mean, yeah, there is a lot has always been that kind of a criticism of zoos about the types of facilities or that the animals might be in. Well, I think this project is trying to break ground on this one, is actually creating new spaces that are free and feel like their habitat or natural habitat, and an experience of actually being outdoors. You know, where we're trying to give opportunities beyond just their existing indoor habitat. So I think this was a great opportunity for the Toronto Zoo to kind of demonstrate that the idea of conservation and really their main mission was about giving opportunities for animals to feel like that they're in their natural habitat as best as it can. Obviously, we live in Canada, where this is not Indonesia, But I think that's what the idea of this project, I think even with the new project that we're, that was to talk about the community conservation campus, is really creating this, these habitats, like give the, like, for example, the otter, they'll give them a freedom, and not feel like they're, call it captive.
Yeah. I think that's an important distinction between these, you know, calling something a habitat and designing with that aspiration versus, you know, calling it an enclosure or in calling it, you know, it's an exhibit, right?
Exactly,
where everything's just
yeah.
on display. So that's, you know, that's an important distinction. I think we're starting to run short here on time. So, Edward, I just want to thank you again for your time. Is there anything that you want to shout out, or if people want to get in touch, any place where they can reach you?
Yeah. I mean, I would love them to come to our website and see all the other interesting projects that we're doing, not only just in the animal and zoo habitat. We're also involved in a very interesting project in Ottawa. We're from the design competition for the Block 2 project and for the parliamentary precinct. I think that's going to be a very fascinating project when it's completed. So I think people can definitely look at the design their website and see all the interesting projects and what we're doing. And again, this is our 70th anniversary, so we're going to be putting some things on the website and then just kind of broadcasting through our social media channels. So I would say look out for it.
Perfect. Excellent. And go to the zoo. Those people listening, if you haven't been, go check out the orangutan habitat at the Toronto Zoo. Definitely worth spending a day wandering around there and exploring. So that wraps up this episode. We've been chatting with Edward Chan. He's an architect and partner at Zeidler Architecture. We'll be recording more episodes over the next few months, so stay tuned for some fresh episodes coming your way. If you have a question or you want to provide some feedback or just simply get in touch, you can send us an email at podcast@oaa.on.ca. And you can also find out more about the Ontario Association of Architects and how it regulates architecture throughout the province of Ontario by visiting oaa.on.ca. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review, tell your friends. That's how we'll be able to make more episodes in the future. And of course, Architecturally Speaking is available wherever you get your podcasts and also on the OAA's YouTube channel. So check that out for the full video version of today's conversation. And until next time, I'm your host, Ryan Schwartz, and this has been Architecturally Speaking. Thanks.